This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear. But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. Only in theaters June 14. Get tickets now.
This is Sarah.
This is Jenna from Name Three Songs, and today we are getting candid with Judah Akers from Judah and the Lion. We had a really lovely chat with him, and it was just a very personal conversation, and when she talks about a lot of his struggles that he's gone through like very recently, and we were really grateful for his openness in this interview, yeah. So you guys are really in for a treat. And to give you some context on Judah and the Lion, they formed as a band in 2011 when the members were attending Belmont University in Nashville. The band is currently doing an arena tour with Need to Breathe, and they have an upcoming song with Kayflay.
So we're getting candid with Judah from Judah and the Lion about how heartbreak and personal struggles nearly stopped him from playing music, how he finds a personal sense of responsibility in being vulnerable in his songwriting, and how the band has stayed grounded in the chaos of the music industry while living a life of touring over 200 days a year prior to COVID.
Chaos.
True chaos. So come join us and Judah for a wonderful conversation.
Hi, Judah. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello.
We're so excited to talk to you today. So you guys are currently on an arena tour with Need to Breathe, and you've been a band for over a decade now and have played venues of all sizes. But what is it like playing for crowds this big every single night?
It's really awesome. Honestly, having catering is like such
the dream.
Such a dream. Yeah. We're like making juices, like, you know, living our best life. But no, it's been such a great, like, sweet spirit already on tour. Just the crowds have been amazing. And just as far as like the Need to Breathe camp, it's going to be a really, really cool run.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. So you guys have been playing music for quite a while. I'm sure you've seen venues of all sizes. How do you feel like the live show experience has changed from the beginning to now?
Oh, that's a great question. I think as far as like our performance goes, it hasn't really changed that much. We've always, I think, kind of cut our teeth on the road. I mean, before the pandemic, we were doing around 200 shows a year, which was
That's
a lot,
insane.
Especially like in the band days. So I think we've always liked our goofiness on stage and kind of embraced it, even now, like having like little dance moments or stuff like that. But yeah, I think you adjust as the crowds get bigger and you kind of figure out different ways to kind of make sure everybody feels like included. I think that we've always loved going to shows that are interactive, that involve people that are there. And it's been really cool to kind of adjust as that growth has happened.
Yeah.
But as far as like the core part of like, I guess the DNA of who we are, it's still kind of the same.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like live music is really just such a core part of y'all as musicians and what Judah and the Lion is. But like with COVID and like the pandemic happening, what was that adjustment like for you suddenly not having live music? And also like the uncertainty of not knowing like when we were going to have live music again.
Yeah, the limbo was a lot. I mean, it was a lot for a lot of musicians. I don't know if you guys went through that with what y'all, yeah. Y'all do. But yeah, I think just the state of being in limbo and kind of, we had a tour, an arena tour of our own that we had to cancel in 2020. Yeah. That was a bummer. And then, you know, for us, we were kind of on this, a little bit of a trajectory, and it felt like we kind of lost a little bit of momentum. And then we've just now kind of recovered from it. So I think for me, you know, I don't think I really realized how therapeutic shows were.
Yeah. Mm.
So I actually started really suffering from like high anxiety, panic attacks, stuff like that. And my therapist at the time said, well, you're kind of used to like screaming and like dancing,
times.
You know, yeah. Like a buffoon for like 150 yeah. nights a week. And I know that sounds like weird, but you know, I think I just had all this pent up energy yeah. that I wasn't like really releasing. And so that ended up actually being such a growth year for me and the guys in the band of just really like, I mean, again, we were doing 250 shows a year. Yeah. It was probably too much. And I maybe like in a very classic Southern jock way can tend to bottle things up a bit.
Mm.
And I think just the chaos and how busy we were, I had a lot going on just in my personal life with my family and just didn't realize that I hadn't really faced those demons. So the pandemic without the, I guess the cathartic part of the shows made me kind of face those, which was, I think now I can look back and say it's really beautiful, but it was really, really hard
yeah.
at the time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of people had a lot of personal growth that happened in the like forced isolation that came with the pandemic. And it's always really interesting hearing like musicians talk about it and like how they utilize live shows specifically as like another emotional outlet aside from like obviously songwriting. And I mean, like, now that you are back on the road, like, what is that kind of like give and take? Like, again, being able to share those emotions with fans after not having that for some time.
Oh, I mean, it's like a wave of emotions. It's really wild. Like, one of our first festivals back was Firefly in Dover, Delaware.
Yeah.
And I like bawled my eyes out after the set. Wow. You know, it was like one of those just like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
Now I'm crying and it can't stop. And I'm like, you know, like backstage, the crew's like, what the heck is going on with this guy? And yeah, you know, I think that a lot of artists that I talk to is like, I think for me, it's like, I even like realize the energy that you're giving away.
Yeah.
In a given night. And so to kind of respect that, and me and the guys kind of have like a before grounding session, if you want to call it that, just make sure that we're like really in the present moment now. Mm-hmm. And then after the show, it's kind of the same thing, because I think, you know, it's not really normal to be on stage and to have people yelling your songs, and in some ways it's very weird and unhuman. So even like Bruce Springsteen, he would like ground himself, go on a dinner date with someone in that town to make himself kind of realize that adrenaline or that energy that you're getting back, you know, it's not long lasting, I should say.
I think it's so interesting to hear you say this, because we've talked to like a lot of younger artists on our show, and it's like they almost just haven't spent enough time on the road to like understand and come to terms with like these types of feelings and how much like emotional exchange there is. And especially to have a career where, you know, you're doing this night after night for years on end, like it can take a toll on you. And so I think it's really interesting to hear you talk about in this way of like needing to have that grounding moment in order to like balance out the highs and the lows.
Yeah, it's like a must for us boys now, especially after the pandemic. You know, there's a lot of nerves coming back and playing shows.
Yeah.
Luckily for us, it was a bit of like a muscle memory thing, but I mean, I was like so nervous for the first time like in my career coming back and playing these festivals, because it's just like, oh my gosh, we were during the pandemic, you know, crowds of people, we were kind of transfixed on this is a problem. You know, we don't do that. And all of a sudden you're on a plane and you're headed to a show. It's like, whoa. So I really have like a lot of empathy for, you know, specifically some of the lead singers that have had a hard time kind of coming back with the mental health, because it was a lot to ask emotionally. And I think, you know, for young artists or for people, it's really good to start taking that seriously early on and know where you're getting that energy from, because shows can be energy suckers, that's for sure.
So a lot of us have these key moments in our relationship to music that really form who we are as people. So I'm curious if there's anything that stands out to you, maybe when you're younger, of this moment of like, music is what I have to be doing with my life.
I actually have a pretty poignant moment that I can think of. Was I was kind of a church kid growing up. I grew up in like a small town, Middle Tennessee, really cute kind of rural town, but in a little ways just kind of sheltered, I guess I would say. And I came to an Exit In show, which is kind of a small club here in Nashville, with a buddy of mine that was kind of an indie kid, and I saw The Format. Which, you know, some of the guys ended up becoming fun. And you know, for me, this kind of sheltered kid, I mean, it was like tattoos and like people are smoking pot. And I was like, what is this?
This is what crazy.
So I was like, I don't know if I was just like sheltered or if that was just like the coolest thing. It was probably a little bit of the chicken and the egg, but that moment, just seeing Nate and the boys just kind of like really control the crowd. And he was such a charismatic front man and very endearing and sweet. And, you know, his voice kind of spoke for itself. But I remember like calling my mom after that, and I was like, I think this is crazy, but I would at least like to write songs. I didn't think I was good enough at music at the time, transparently. So I was like, I just want to do something in music. So that was one of those kind of transcending moments for me.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Do y'all have one?
Actually, yes. I mean, so when I was a kid, I really wanted to be in a band. My mom took me. Do you know the movie, the 2001 movie, Josie and the Pussycats?
No, it sounds sick, though.
It was so good. It was kind of like a satire on the music industry. But Tara Reid played the drummer in the band, and I thought she was so cool. And when it was done, I was like, Mom, I want to do that. And she was like, okay. Oh, and then she got me drum lessons and I was like, there we go. And I was not good at drums. So then I started doing music photography. And then I was like, because I was like, I have to be involved somehow.
Yeah.
That's so sick.
Yeah. We both have.
You got the cool hair for it.
We both have similar stories of like being really into like the emo Warped Tour scene as teenagers. And we both come from live music photography backgrounds. And then when pandemic happened, we switched to doing this. So we've always just like had that love of music also.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like figuring out how to be involved in whatever way possible. I think it's interesting how we all keep kind of bringing up how we've had to readjust since the pandemic and so much that has changed since then, because like, I don't know, I feel like it's affected people in so many different ways. And I mean, also just like with the band, you guys did have a founding member, Nate, leave in 2021 in the midst of all of this. But I'm curious, like in the wake of that, what was the process in figuring out how to continue as Judah and Lion, as two of you, especially when like you're separated from each other, not only because of the pandemic, but because Brian moved to another country for a little bit?
Yeah, it was very wild. Like we were all kind of, again, it was a forced break, but I can look back on it and say that I think the pandemic probably saved our band. Because I think we were probably on the verge of burnout.
Yeah.
And so we kind of went through that friction phase where Nate really realized, you know, he never really loved writing. I don't want to speak for him out of turn, but the studio and stuff would tend to stress him out a little bit. And there was just one kind of big confrontation with the three of us. And he had just kind of just blurted out. It's like, I don't want to be in the band anymore. And it was like, whoa, oh, how do we deal with this?
Yeah.
That was right when Brian got back from Sweden. And then it kind of, you know, Nate was even more vulnerable about his mental health and like what he was going through just kind of in his own life. And me and Brian both just really saw him and kind of commended him for it. We're like, that's awesome that you're fighting for yourself.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You're way more important than music and the band. And so he took off a couple of years and he's actually back playing with us now.
Oh, amazing.
So he's on this tour now, which has been very redeeming and sweet. But yeah, I think those are kind of the moments of like, all right, Brian, do we want to keep doing this? He was going through a lot just with his wife going to school out in Sweden. I was going through my own marriage problems at the time, transparently. And it was just kind of like, what are we doing this for?
You know?
And I think that for everybody, and not to be like a motivational speaker here, but I think it's really cool to have those moments where you get back to the why. Like, why did y'all start this podcast? Like, why did we start this band? And do we still feel like we have something to say?
Yeah.
And once we got to the root of that, we were like, we know why we started this band. We still have that why, and we still have a lot to say.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, pushing through and going from a tour that was going to be in arenas and going back into, you know, bigger clubs or whatever our last headlining tour was, a little strike to the ego.
Yeah.
But again, that's just like, losing the ego is so important for artists.
It
creates better music.
Yeah.
It makes you a better person.
Yeah.
And so we're like in a really good spot of gratitude and I guess just thankful for where we're at now. So we kind of made it through at least that challenge.
I mean, it sounds like you guys have a really strong backbone to all of this, which I think is really incredible. And I also love how open and comfortable you are talking about how important focusing on mental health is. Cause I think like for a lot of people, that's a discomfort level. And I know for like millennial generation, a lot of us, like our parents, it was like you whisper about therapy at the dinner table kind of thing. And like the past 10 years and especially the past 5 years, that's really shifted. And I think like even just like in your music, it's really clear that mental health has always been important. But like on our podcast, we talk a lot about how men historically like just have not been encouraged to talk about their mental health. It's like take it on the chin and just like keep going and dealing with it. And so I'm just curious like what your experience has been with like dealing with that stigma and kind of being like ignoring it really and just being comfortable being like, mental health is important. This is something we need to focus on.
I mean, thank you. I think I probably run both sides of that. Like the classic stereotype of a Southern dude jock that, you know, my dad was pretty tough on me, kind of the classic. He was the coach of, you know, my school team and ended up playing college baseball. And I guess in that on that side was like very like fighting, like don't cry, be tough.
Yeah.
But then my mom was such a powerful woman in my life, and she was also a therapist.
Oh.
So it really helped that she was like the opposite. She was like, she was the one that encouraged me to get into music and just say like, hey, instead of punching the locker room, like with your fist,
yeah,
why don't you get a guitar and start writing? let's put this in a space. And Brian's mom is actually a therapist as well.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
Yeah. So it's, I would attest it to the powerful women in our life, to be honest. But I think for me, it was just this moment where like literally my body, like my back and like stress was manifesting itself.
Yeah.
Especially through my divorce. And I had an aunt on one side commit suicide and an uncle on the other side commit suicide. My mom was in and out of jail. And it was like one of those things where my body was like literally like,
yeah,
yo,
you need to do something like, about this. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was kind of one of those four situations for me where I really had to pursue my own therapist.
Yeah.
And my mom always encouraged therapy, but I think just having a mom as a therapist, I just never really felt like I needed it myself, you know, stubbornly. I was like, I know how to get through this. My mom's given me the tools. and so I think, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of just interpersonal stuff kind of happened for me. I was just like, okay, like I have to practice what I preach here a little bit.
Yeah.
And it was, 2021, I went in with now my, I call him like my brother, therapist, mentor, and did like my first round of EMDR and healing, like breath and, you know, all of this work that I had kind of pushed away because I honestly was scared to go inside. And I think that it's okay to be scared of that, you know, to go inward is like a really tough thing. And I think especially, you know, that, you know, some guys are not as good, and I would put myself in this category and processing emotions, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it is a scary thing because you don't really know what's going to come up.
Yeah.
But I will say at now, still practicing, still going to therapy, it's like I could say that it like saved my life because now I'm not suffering as bad in my body. I know what to do when that anger comes up. Yeah. I know what to do and not to fight the tears, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I guess I would encourage anyone listening. It's sometimes so backwards how life works. It's like sometimes there's so much strength in like admitting where you're weak.
Yeah.
Like there's so much freedom when you say something that's true. Like,
yeah,
I really am struggling here. You know, there's something just so powerful about that.
Yeah.
But it's so backwards to the way that, you know, at least in American culture, a lot of, you know, we're just taught to be the best.
Yeah,
you know?
Literally.
You know, it can lean to being like very toxic as far as like, I feel like I was living some version of a life of like toxic positivity.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Where it was just like, everything is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Which it's okay to have hope. I think that's really important for humans. But I really went on a tangent there. I'm so sorry.
I was going to say,
like, thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. Because obviously a lot of this is really personal for you. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, when you're in that place, it can be so hard to talk about it. And I think now, you know, putting in some work, it's easier to have these types of conversations. But I saw this interview you did where you were talking about like artists, to be a creative person, you kind of need to operate from a place of love rather than a place of fear. And when you're operating out of this like scarcity mindset, and I think, you know, a lot of this comes into play with the pandemic and with like not knowing what's going to happen with the band and like personal life, like all of this is scary and is terrifying. And then you have to go into the studio and write about things. And so for you, like having all of this in mind, do you feel like you have a responsibility to be vulnerable in your songwriting?
That's also a very poignant question. Y'all are awesome at this, by the way.
Thank you.
That's a poignant question because the record that we just worked on came from a place where I had just gone through this really painful divorce, biggest heartbreak of my life, and honestly didn't want to write about it because I'm like, I don't want the world to know about my biggest failure. You know, like I don't want to be honest about like how this all went down. And me and Brian kind of had kind of conclusion of just like, well, this is our like kind of like DNA of like the why of who we are.
Yeah.
And even though my story it is raw and vulnerable and really tough at times. Like, I feel like our goal is to do that, like operate out of love instead of fear. So fear would say, don't do that.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be really hard. And I feel like love would say is, no, that's going to be really, really hard. It's going to be even worse, but we're going anyways.
Right.
Mm.
So it's like this thought of like, okay, if I'm operating out of love as an artist, then I'm able to kind of speak freely without judgment, you know?
Yeah.
If that, does that make sense? Or like, yeah, judging, well,
it goes,
myself.
It kind of goes back to what you just said a minute ago about like, there's power in like saying you're not all right or saying what you're going through. I think that's, it's kind of that of knowing like, yeah, it's going to suck and it's going to be hard and it's going to be uncomfortable and I'm maybe not going to feel the best putting this out there, but like people are going to recognize that and they're going to connect with it. And like in the end, you'll be all the better for it.
Yeah, there's, I know at least from the music that I love, it's like the music that makes you feel less alone in the world is what I kind of tend to gravitate to. And even though our record Pep Talks was a lot about just what it was like with my mom and struggle with alcohol and my parents' divorce and kind of going through that as a mid-20s, you know, person. And it's like, you wouldn't imagine how many 13-year-old kids that are going like through their parents' divorce resonate somehow with a 25-year-old story. It's just, it's beautiful how music can kind of do that. And so that's at least our intention, is to bring hope and make people feel less alone. I think that's what you guys are probably doing really well on this podcast as well.
Thank you. I mean, you can tell like in your lyricism that like there is kind of like this poetry and storytelling aspect to it, that like it's understandable like how quickly and easily people would be able to connect to the music. And I mean, specifically like in listening to your recent single, Only Want the Best, like it obviously, like as you said, like it was about going through the end of a relationship, and breaking up is such a specific loss that you go through, and like the six stages of grief that you deal with, like in regards to like death, also work into relationships ending. But the song feels like you were at the acceptance stage of grief rather than like the usual anger or depression like stage that people usually write from. And so what made you want to write that song from that stage of grief? Because I feel like it's something that like you don't really hear that much and is kind of needed, because I feel like a lot of people forget that there is that stage where you're going to finally like understand what you went through and be like, okay, I get why this happened, or I get what's happening now.
Thank you for that question. So we're, I don't know if you saw this, but the next record is actually just about all the stages of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so Only Want the Best is on actually the last part of depression.
Yeah.
But the thought, I guess, in general was, just to be honest, I was writing like really harsh songs after my heartbreak.
Yeah, of course. And, that's normal.
it helped my back problems. But I don't think it would have been really good for the world. And I think when you go through heartbreak or betrayal or any type of reasons why relationships end, obviously there's going to be anger that you go through. Yeah. There's going to be this bargaining, which I learned a lot about bargaining, because that was like the one I was like, what does bargaining mean? It's like, I'm such an idiot. But yeah, I think after I kind of got all of those, I guess, more intense, harsh songs out of the, I call it the kitchen, like, I just got it out of the system.
Yeah.
Then me and Brian were able to write the whole record from this position of forgiveness, but also go back and look back and be like, okay, there's a way I can say, like, when I was, like, I got diagnosed with this thing called heartbreak syndrome, which I didn't know about at the time, but it was essentially my left arm was way weaker than my right arm.
Whoa.
And I thought I was like having a seizure, and I went to the doctor. He was like, no, you're suffering from this thing called heartbreak syndrome. It's essentially where your heart's just breaking.
Wow.
Oh my
so,
God.
A lot of older men that go through divorces that maybe aren't in good shape or whatever can have a heart attack from it, whatever. Anyways,
oh, wow.
All I had to say is I can go back and look at it and be like, oh, that was right when I was in denial.
Right.
You know, I was in denial that this relationship was ending. I didn't want to admit it. The anger songs or the kind of the punk songs. But yeah, it's just, we're actually intertwining my therapist within the record too,
cool.
Which is really fun. He's got a writing credit as well, which is
super
special for me. Yeah, but I think Only Want the Best, that being kind of the, I guess, the flagship song currently for the new record, is, it's true. Like, I think we all go through relationship ending, and it's this weird holding of the two things of like, I truly only want the best for you.
Yeah.
Like, this really hurt that you broke my heart.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I broke yours as well. But like, at the end of the day, like, if I'm going to do this operating out of hopefully a position of forgiveness,
right,
then I think we can all resonate with that message of like, this sucks, but like only good things for you.
Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting of you have to get it out, right? It's the catharticness of like needing to go through that process yourself. But then like kind of once you're a little bit on the other side, like looking back of like, what is it I want to release into the world and having the best intentions for people and your art and, you know, hopefully what people will connect with and not wanting to have like malice in the mix. So I think that's really fascinating to hear you talk about that. But I do want to switch gears a little bit for a second here because we're very interested in this idea of fame and what specifically means for musicians in the world that we're living in today. Because if we look back at like the heyday of rock stars, they were kind of considered this otherworldly being, or they were a little bit untouchable. And for some people, a little bit aspirational, even though obviously there was a lot happening in the era of rock and roll. And back in 2011, when you guys started as a band, social media was still like a very new thing. And streaming was a very new thing of like, what is the music? What is even happening to the music industry? And so I'm curious, like, what is your idea of success and like how has this kind of changed from when you started out to now?
You know, we're kind of in that Z-list category, so I don't really know what truth like fame is, but you know, I do think it is interesting how the phrase I've said is like I wouldn't wish fame on my worst enemy. Like I think it's such a weird weight.
Yeah,
I mean we see it on the celebrities that we have now, right? That obviously deal with this tension, and I mean Taylor Swift can't go to her you know football game without
ten articles about her and all of TikTok now being on SNL.
But I think for us, like, this is gonna, I'm not trying to point back to a song, but we have a song called Take It All Back that literally was about our first experience on David Letterman. We were like a nobody band, had like 10 Facebook followers at the time.
Gosh.
Instagram wasn't even around,
right?
You know? And we were kind of at that spot where we dropped out of college. Our parents are a little concerned for us, you know?
Yeah.
And we get randomly called to be on the David Letterman show right before he retired. And
so cool.
It was one of those moments we were like, we're going to be famous.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and honestly, the show was so fun. It was like such an honor, blah, blah, blah. We film it. It aired the next day. We watched it and then it was done.
Yeah.
And we kind of had this moment as a band. We were like, oh my God, if we make this about like moments, then we're going to get to the end of our career and hate ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you make it about, you know, we got to headline Red Rocks. If you make it about headlining Red Rocks, that moment is awesome for an hour and a half.
Right. But it's, you know, right.
Yeah.
So I think, and to go back, Take It All Back, it's like that song in general is about to this, like the core of like the why we do it.
Right.
And the reason why we make music is to make connections of hope and hopefully love in the midst of a goofy, six goofy white dudes playing music. You know, and if we can make somebody's day better, if it's one person, like, it's always so funny because we start our tours notoriously off like in the biggest markets, like 10,000 people, 8,000, but we'll finish like in like Montreal where we're like 200 people.
Yeah,
show up.
Yeah.
And we really, and it's easier said than done. I'm not the best at this, to be honest with you as a competitor, but I think going back to the question of fame is like, if the hope and love is real, then it means just as much in front of five people in Montreal as it does in front of 10,000 people and wherever that. So I think we've kind of held each other accountable in that regard.
Yeah.
Again, we're not perfect at it. We're human beings. But I think that's what we've tried to kind of stick with our band, at least.
I think that's a really beautiful sentiment. And I think if people go into these situations with the hope of fame as the goal, I feel like it's very easy to tell. And right now, just like with how social media is right now, like, people have gotten so much better at being able to suss out who's doing it for the love of music and who's doing it for the love of the idea of like what music can bring them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just really incredible, like what you're saying of being like, yeah, we all kind of are there to bring each other back to earth, and like just the sharing of music and emotion with everybody is really all that matters. Yeah. And I just think that's incredible. And I feel like right now also we're in this weird space where like, I feel like pre-pandemic there was a lot of like, oh, there's already a band that's doing this, there's only room for them, therefore my band's not going to have the success. But I think that like we all thought we lost music for like a year, and now it feels like there's so much more room for lots of bands doing the same things and like working together and like less competitiveness, which I think has also really changed the idea of like what fame and success can look like for musicians.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. It's like the, what's the quote? The spirit of comparison is a thief of joy.
Yeah.
And so I think like, and I don't know if y'all deal, I mean, I'm sure y'all deal with this, like with podcasts. I mean,
yeah.
As competitive as, you know, having your own podcast is, you know, it's hard not to wish that we were doing arenas, but that's like a never ending cycle. It's like right. You get to arenas and then you want more and more and more. Yeah. And it's like, you have to be, and again, not perfect at this, but we talk a lot about, there's a fine line between ambition and contentment. And how neither one of those are a bad thing. Like, it's good to be content and it's good to be ambitious. Yeah. It's good to be passionate. But there's a fine line there to where if ambition runs amok, then you're never content. And then if you're too content, then you're not passionate enough. So it's like holding those at a kind of metaphorical balance where it's like, okay, I think I'm holding these. I can be content with where I'm at, but I'm also pushing.
Yeah. And I think also, I mean, having a 10 plus year career is a huge accomplishment in itself, especially for many musicians.
That was a fun 10 year. We got to celebrate in Cancun. We got this like random like private gig offer. We're like, we're going to Cancun.
Nice. That's perfect.
But it is like, to piggyback off that, it's like one of my favorite like teachers says, the American way is already, should be already debunked, because the pursuit of happiness is indicative of that you actually don't have happiness because you're in the pursuit of it.
Yeah.
If you have happiness, then you shouldn't be in the pursuit of it.
Right.
And so it's just this like notion of like, okay, how do we be with happiness rather than pursue it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
we could also,
for everybody.
We could also talk about how capitalism and forever growth is not sustainable, but I think that's a whole other episode.
So. All right. I'm available tomorrow. Let's go.
But to wrap things up with a little bow very nicely, the ethos of Name Three Songs is to empower fangirls. And we think it's important to be critical consumers, but also celebrate the things that we love unapologetically. So, Judah, what are you a fangirl of?
Tell you what I'm a big fangirl of is these dogs right here.
Oh my God.
Oh, so cute.
Hi.
Oh my God. So precious.
I'm a fangirl of I Think You Should Leave.
Okay.
Tim Robinson.
Yes.
We did Jimmy Kimmel or one of the late nights with him, and he was just so funny on Jimmy Kimmel.
He's hilarious.
And we religiously watched that show. I'm a fangirl of Frightened Rabbit, favorite band of all time. Talk about mental health.
Yeah.
Mm.
That is a gold mine of feeling less alone in the world. Is it three?
No.
As many as you want.
Oh.
Anything that makes you feel good.
And I guess last but not least, fangirl of Tennessee football.
Nice.
I am a Southern boy, true and true. So go Vols. We sucked yesterday, but.
I guess we could also talk about Travis and Taylor for another whole episode, too.
I'm available Wednesday, too, okay? It would be fun to come back on and have y'all, like, listen to the record.
Yeah.
And we could talk about, like, the grieving process or whatever.
Yeah, I would love
y'all
that.
Y'all are, like, so, y'all are so great at this. So.
Thank you.
Oh my God,
I would
you're
be honored
me
to come
cry.
Back on. I'm not just blowing smoke.
Thank you. No,
we really that means a lot. It.
Truly, this has been such a lovely conversation, and we always appreciate people who are willing to be so open and share these stories with us. So it's really fantastic to have these conversations. So thank you. Thank you, Judah, for joining us today.
Thank you. Y'all are the best.
I could listen to this man talk for truly hours.
I think we could talk with him for truly hours.
Let's do. I just feel like it was such a give and take conversation, which is always so nice. And it's just so cool to talk to somebody who's been doing this for so long and is so comfortable in where they're at in their career and where they're at in their music journey, that setbacks don't feel like setbacks in the same way as I feel like they have when you hear other artists talk about it.
It's truly amazing to talk to someone who's been doing this for going on 12 years at this point, because there's so many artists who just, you know, can't make this work like long term.
Yeah.
So it's like, number one, rare to find artists who have been able to stay the course, but also just the experience that Judah has been through, both personally and just with the band and everything, is very unique. And for him to be so kind as to share that with us is like so special.
Yeah, definitely. There were so many points in the conversation where I feel like you and I related very deeply to like things that he was talking about, especially in regards to like life changes and
fears during the pandemic. And it was just really interesting to get to hear his viewpoint on that. And I mean, personally, also like getting to discuss with him like their upcoming album and the thoughts of grief and how that reflects on like personal relationships rather than just death, I thought was like just very eye-opening for me personally. And I was like, this is just so cool getting to hear him talk about
a
song that I personally like resonated deeply with.
I mean, also especially people who, musicians, whose like their job is to convey emotion, like their job is to sit with emotion and put it into art. Like, I think that is kind of sometimes taken for granted of the emotional labor they have to go through to create this is wild. So all around, just very, very cool conversation. And thank all of you guys who are listening. Thank you for getting candid with us and Judah and the Lion. This has been Sarah and Jenna from Name Three Songs.
To get your pop culture fix, you can listen to new episodes of Name Three Song Podcast every Wednesday. That's Name the Number Three Songs on all podcast platforms.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo! Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sort. High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again.
Platoon, present cell phone. High Five.
High Five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at High Five Casino.
.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Hey, are you a super fan of Taylor Swift, Jelly Roll, or Morgan Wallen? Are you that song nerd who likes to dive into every little lyric of every little song and figure out what everything means? Do you want to take that a bit further, though? Because I have a podcast called Songwriter Soup, and it dives into the journey of a songwriter and how those people help craft the soundtrack of your life. I'm Laura Veltz, and I'm bringing all of my friends together to discuss our funny little job writing for all of your favorite artists. Listen to Songwriter Soup wherever you get your podcasts.